welcome back to Backbone Radio with your host, Krista Kafer. As I mentioned before the break, we've got a most awesome treat coming up, and that is we'll get to talk to Bob Schaefer. I've known Bob for some time. I worked for him back when he was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. I didn't know him when he was in the Colorado State Senate, but I've known him ever since he was in Congress, and I know him now as he is the president of the State Board of Education and also the principal of Liberty Common High School. He's also, as I said, a friend of mine, and I also would consider to be a mentor. He's taught me a lot of things and somebody that I definitely hold dear. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Krista.
Yeah.
Great chatting with you.
It's great to hear your voice. I think it's been a little while since we talked, and
right.
Glad to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
How's everything at the State Board?
Well, the State Board's doing okay. It's we've been sued a lot lately, so
Carmody,
we've been in court quite a bit. And
who sues the State Board?
Well, the teachers' union for one. They sue the State Board quite a lot, as it turns out. And unfortunately, they've been experiencing some success at the district court level, and hopefully, that will those decisions will be returned to a point of reason for the taxpayers of the state as these appeals go forward.
So why did they sue this time around?
Well, the first one is known as the Lobato case.
This is a
suit that's been going on for quite a long time.
We're not spending enough money on education.
Yeah, it alleges that the state is not spending enough money on education and does not spend the dollars that it does spend in a thorough and uniform way. And that is determined by the legislature. That is a thorough and equal way is determined by, that's a constitutional requirement, but it's that's a determination of the legislature. That's why we elect people, 100 state legislators go down to Denver and hash it all out, and at the end of the year come up with a school finance act that in their estimation is a fair representation of the values of the entire state. And the court has, the teachers union has asked the court to weigh in on that process and determine what is thorough. And the court, lo and behold, thinks it has the authority and thinks it has a better answer than the deliberative process that the state legislature has been able to come up with. And the reason the State Board of Education is involved in this is the legislature actually designs the School Finance Act in the state, but it is the State Board's responsibility then to take that law, the School Finance Act, and fulfill it and to implement it. And so the State Board plays a implementing role in distributing the funds.
This is a kind of a quasi-executive body.
Yeah. The State Board of Education is a curious creation in our state constitution. Imagine this. Here's the best way I can think of to explain it, because a lot of people don't even know we have a state board, much less that we elect members of it. But imagine you're the governor of Colorado, and you assemble all of the heads of the state agencies. And imagine your first day at your first cabinet meeting. You look all around the table, and there's the head of the Department of Transportation, the head of the Department of Social Services, the head of Department of Revenue, and all the other departments. And then down at the other end is the head of the biggest agency of all, the Department of Education. As governor, you would appoint all of those cabinet heads except for the one who presides over the biggest state agency, and that's the Commissioner of Education. That person is appointed by the State Board of Education, and we're all elected independently. So it is kind of a quasi-executive level agency in that the management of it is overseen by an elected board rather than by a single governor.
I guess it would give the voter a little bit more say over it, or at least an, sort of an independent say, independent of the governor, which is also a voted in position. But are there other states that do it like this?
Yeah, some states have their board appointed. Other states have their board elected. So it just varies from state to state. One thing it does tend to guarantee with respect to education is more of a level of consistency and predictability. The state board members themselves are elected on 6-year terms, and our terms alternate. So in any given year, we've got two, maybe three of us that are up for election, while the rest of us, are there for another 4 years or another 6 years. So you don't have an immediate and abrupt turnover in leadership of the management of the department. Now, keep in mind, even though the board is elected on the management side, the big decisions involved where education is concerned are made by the legislature, and rightly should be. So we don't get to get too deep into real policy at the state board level. It's mainly a matter of once the legislature implements a law and there's certain rulemaking authority that the board has, that just deals with just the nuts and bolts of how these laws are going to be implemented. That's what we have an influence on. So it's not a significant amount of authority, but it's not a huge amount of authority, but it is significant.
Now, the state spends about $500 billion. Is that about right? Not 500, sorry, $5 billion.
Yeah,
dollars
about
on education, roughly.
$5 billion on education. It's the largest single agency from a dollar standpoint in state government, and takes up quite a chunk. If when you consider K-12 and higher ed, you're looking at somewhere around somewhere about 70% to 80% of the entire state budget goes to education.
So the Lobato decision, I assume it'll end up in the state Supreme Court, but should it stand the way the unions would like it, it could mean that education as a line item will sort of push out, or is K-12 education meant pushing out everything else from prisons to higher ed?
Because it will require estimates anywhere from about $3 to $4 billion. It could be over $4 billion. Let's say about $3.5 to $5 billion per year. That's per year to accommodate this Lobato decision. So the district court judge, Judge Sheila Rappaport in Denver District Court, found in favor of the plaintiffs, and the plaintiffs are the governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, the State Board of Education, which I'm chairman of, and then the commissioner of education, whose name is Robert Hammond. So we're the three defendants in this case, and all three defendants are, in fact, appealing and will be appealing to the Supreme Court. So you can expect this to be tied up in the courts for another 6-8 months to a year.
Well, and the Supreme Court's pretty left-leaning. I mean, is there a chance that they will rule poorly in this instance?
Oh, there always is with the current Supreme Court. Very unreliable and just sporadic in its decision making. There's not a lot of real consistency case to case, except that when given the chance, they usually lean left of center. You've got one agency one interest of government versus another interest of government in this case. So it's for that reason it's harder to say which branch of government or which kind of government this court is going to favor. If it's government versus the private sector, the Colorado Supreme Court almost always sides with government. But government versus government, it's harder to predict.
Well, I guess we'll know in, you think, about a year, 9 months to a year?
I mean, they haven't weighed in at all yet as far as scheduling or anything along those lines, and the initial briefs have not been put forward at this point.
It's going to be an odd conundrum, though, if they rule that we have to raise these funds, yet all increases taxation-wise have to go before voter approval. So it could put the legislature in an odd bind, forced by the court to increase expenditures, but the taxpayers likely saying no.
Right. Or the court. I mean, I think what the plaintiffs here are trying to accomplish, deep down, and the plaintiffs here are the teachers' union as well as the Colorado Association of School Boards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some individuals who are named in this as well, including the individual, the family that this case is named after, the Lobato family, and some other individuals. But what they're trying to accomplish, I think, deep down, is to obliterate the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights in the state and obliterate the impact of the Gallagher Amendment, which is in our Constitution and holds proportions of on property taxes, make sure that residential is held in the same proportion as commercial property. that their proportions remain constant going forward in collection of property taxes. So those two amendments, they
protect the taxpayer.
Yeah, they protect taxpayers in different ways, and the way they work together does cause some consternation and frustration for certain local governments at certain times. But by and large, it is a taxpayer protection that prohibits the state legislature and the governor from just continually reaching into the pockets of taxpayers. And ultimately, that's what these people who are in favor of the education bureaucracy, not necessarily the children, by the way, but the people who favor the education bureaucracy, they are very frustrated with these taxpayer protections in the Constitution. And I think there's little doubt that what they're legal strategy is here is to just exacerbate what they consider to be the funding problem in public education to a degree that these protections are removed.
Well, what I think is interesting is that a while back, Kansas City had a court decision that severely ratcheted up the amount of spending on education, and yet when you look back, those billions of dollars that were forced that voters had to put, you know, shuck out, have had absolutely no effect on the education of children. It did not increase learning, did not increase test scores, nothing. I mean, it was just money down a black hole.
That's right.
I can't imagine it would be any different here. Now, we've got the music on, which means we've just got a few seconds left. I'm going to hold you over the break and bring you back on, if that's okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, you're listening to Backbone Radio. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. You're listening to Krista Kafer, and we are talking with Bob Schaefer, the Honorable Bob Schaefer, friend of mine, also elected official here in Colorado. Welcome back.
Thanks, Krista.
And we were talking a little bit about the Lobato case. Are there other lawsuits right now, or is that the primary one?
Well, that's the biggest one in terms of impact on taxpayers. Here's an interesting one. I introduced a rule at the State Board of Education level requiring school districts to notify parents within 24 hours from the point at which a school becomes aware that one of its employees has been arrested or charged with a serious crime. That crime, and there's a list of criminal activity, and the list involves crimes that involve children and the safety and security of children, child abuse, sexual assault, things of that sort. That rule was passed unanimously by the board and is in place right now, today. If a teacher at your school where you have a child is arrested for, let's say, sexual assault or child abuse, you would be notified within 24 hours of that individual had been arrested or charged. The teachers' union sued the State Board of Education over this rule, and the court so far, one on the validity of the rule itself, but they also sued for an injunction on the rule. The courts actually ruled against the teachers' union on this case so far, at least count one on the injunctive relief. However, as every rule in any state agency, before it becomes permanent, that rule has to be accepted by the state legislature, and they vote on a rules package in every legislative session. So this rule is scheduled to be considered during the current session of 2012. But there's a committee called the Legislative Legal Services Committee. This is 10 legislators from both the House and the Senate, 10 Republican or 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, and they put this rules package together. And so they pulled my rule out, this rule on parental notification, and set it aside and held a special hearing about it back in December. And on a 5-5 vote, the vote was 5-5 to put this parental notification rules into the overall rules package, meaning that the legislature took a giant step toward killing the rule.
Mm-hmm.
So unless the legislature puts this rule back into its rules package, it will die on, I think it's May 15th of 2012. and parents will get shoved back into the dark as to being knowledgeable about arrests and charges of public school employees that are close to their children. So this is another case where the teachers union failed. They opposed the rule as it was moving through the State Board of Education. They, of course, sued the state and sued the state board over this rule, and then they went to work at the state capitol lobbying their friends, and of course their friends are Democrats in this case, and all five of the Democrats on that committee voted against, and you need six votes out of a 10-member committee in order for the rule to pass. So the union is succeeding in eliminating this pro-parent, pro-child protection initiative, and of course their members are teachers' union members, and one of the reasons people join the union is if you ever are arrested or charged with such a crime, that's the union's job to defend and protect the criminal teacher.
What if somebody's arrested and charged, but then later turns out to be innocent? Has their name then gone out? I hate to play devil's advocate because
that's fine because that happens already. The arrest or charge is done by a law enforcement agency, and so that is already a matter of public record, regardless of the rule. The rule just takes what is already public information and connects it with those individuals who would care the most, which.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But
parents of those children.
Is the person have to be named specifically in that notice to parents?
Yes, the name is public record. It is that is what the district attorney and the court put in public record. It's usually printed on some small tiny print in the back page of
the blotter.
In the blotter in your local newspaper. But rarely is it spelled out that this is a public school teacher and what school they're in. And districts have gone to heroic lengths to try to cover these things up, and I'm talking about cases where the offense is quite serious, and so that's the underlying issue, is that districts actually conceal this information from parents, and as I say, go to heroic lengths, and so making sure that parents are aware of public information that relates to a teacher is what this rule is all about. And the rule also requires if the charges are dropped or if the defendant is found not guilty, the school ought to and should. And I mean, the rule actually requires it. I think most schools would do it on their own. Would
exonerate that person.
Would notify the same individuals as well.
What was the reason?
Up here in Fort Collins, there were two cases in 2010 where one, a teacher had assaulted a student, and the other one involved that was a male teacher. The other one involved a female teacher at a different school that had given alcohol to a number of children on an outing. And in both cases, the school was aware of this. The teachers had been charged. They'd been arrested. And the school there was actually email messages exchanged between the superintendent and school board members and the communications officer for the district and the principal of the two schools, separate principals, where they actually discussed how and when they would notify parents. And the bottom line is they all agreed. They had a plan, and the plan was we will not tell parents until and unless the media starts poking around in these two cases. Well, the local newspaper up here, the Fort Collins Coloradoan, was actually doing an investigation on an entirely different matter, and so they requested emails associated with this other matter, and when they got their emails back under the Colorado Open Records Act, they discovered the emails associated with this case and then diverted their attention to the crisis at hand. And it was a huge embarrassment.
That's a big deal.
But what it pointed out was that the district's, here's a teacher who sexually assaulted a child. And the district had moved this teacher around to other schools and had tried to deal with it themselves, but they decided that it was not in the interest of the parents of the school notify them. And
I can see why you do the rule. That is ridiculous. I cannot imagine that they would. I mean, I can imagine it, but that is just it is absurd that adults would hide something that had been done to a child from the parent body. Now, can
I
keep you around a little while longer? We got a break, and I'd love to keep you on. These subjects are just fascinating. So it'll be a break, and then we'll be back.
Of course.
You're listening to Backbone Radio.